So I hate to say that the last time I was in Alaska was 19 months and 3 weeks ago. I caught a helicopter out of Igigig, and my duffel bag was laid down with a couple of frozen salmons. As the cannery boss picked up my bag, I cringed. He was actually the boss of all of Bristol Bay. "What you got in here?" he said. "A couple of dead bodies." No, I just really like to read," I said. "Lots of books, some camping gear." I was only in the Bay 3 weeks that year, and I headed north to get my fix before heading south to graduate school, where I walked the docks on my way to classes in Ballard. I was surrounded by the summer sun, traffic, empty fishboat stalls, as all my friends up north sunned themselves in liquid sunshine, the reports would say. It was an epic same year. This past summer, I was a little slow in calling my skipper up north, and by the time I got a hold of him, he'd given my job away and all of his kids would be crewing for him that year. It was almost an Alaska summer, and I was adrift. I was awash. I mean, I was a mess on so many accounts. It was like getting my heart broken. I was crushed. Adrift in the water, and that orange life ring was just out of reach. And I grasped for that little yellow floating three-strand line, and it slipped through my hands, and I was getting numb. And then my friend Nancy took me out for a beer. "Why not row the Yukon, Kelly? You've been talking about it for years. Perhaps this is your big chance." And the idea just kind of sat there, unlike my beer, which I greedily swallowed down. And it sat there for a day or two like a fish forgotten in the corner of the hold on our tender up in Bristol Bay. But not for long, because as soon as we'd leave the dock, Elsa would gut them and I would fillet them, and we'd toss them in Ziploc bags and they'd be chucked in the freezer in no time. So a couple of days went by and I went home and I researched, who would I go to the Yukon with? Would I go alone? You know, I've always held on to this idea that I would row or paddle the Yukon with the one that I love. But there was this problem. Well, I'm single, and there wasn't just this one that I loved waiting at home all ready to head out on a really long trip with me. You know, someone like as energetic as I wanted to be and who could be kind of strong-willed and often emotional. So then, on my computer screen, up popped this thing called the Yukon River Quest. And I remember looking at it while surfing the internet one night. It's a 450-mile canoe and kayaking race, and I had 3 days to sign up for it before the entry closed, and another year would go by. And I was in my last month of student teaching and my last month of graduate school, and I had 3 days to sign up and pay with the money that I didn't have, and I needed to get a spot tracking device, and I had to make a plan. And my hand gripped that orange life ring. I thought I might be back in the game. And 1 month and 4 days later, the race started in White Horse, Yukon Territories, to the sound of the steam engine whistle blowing, and 66 teams of paddlers ran in their rubber boots or their neoprene booties and their life jackets down to the Yukon River. It was a sea of flying paddles and small boats careening down the Brown River as onlookers like my dad and my uncle and everyone else hollered and quickly drifted upstream. 30 miles into the race, one of the other three solo women kayakers dropped out. Six canoes capsized on Lake LaBarge in high seas, and I clocked 9.8 miles an hour on my GPS as I surfed down 3 foot freshwater waves and watched Granite Peak sail past me. I stopped at hour 10 to change my clothes, grab a snack, and get ready for the night that lay ahead. I swept through 30 Mile Canyon as the sunset behind the embankments. And the other woman paddler was up ahead, and she looked slow, dangerously slow, and I prepared to pass her. I didn't want her to know where I was in the pack, so I slowed down to snack, to drink, to pee, to do anything to prepare myself to pass her. And then I couldn't go any slower, and her low brace dragged on, and she had fallen asleep in her kayak on the river. So I paddled up next door and I offered her a no-dose, some chocolate-covered coffee beans. "Hey, don't fall asleep out here. It's dangerous out here." And so we talked and we paddled for hours, and then around a bend I went on, and she seemed awake enough, and that night turned to dawn. And it was so bright that I needed sunglasses and I wanted coffee. But I didn't dare stop at a rest stop. I've read enough dog-munching racing books to know that those checkpoints are where you lose the race. "Just keep paddling," I told myself. And I mixed my instant coffee with cold water, and I paddled on. And about noon, we entered the burn, Miles and miles of burned forests and gold rush for morel mushrooms was on, and remote camps were set up on the beaches and four-wheelers transporting that spongy gold to the riverbank, and skiffs were ferrying it down sea to the sea of buyers where they'd set up shop. And I shouted for our friend, Olivier. Olivier! But he didn't hear me. At 2 that afternoon, I rounded the bend to Carmax and negotiated the small docks without capsizing, and I was helped up out of my kayak and managed to walk with help up the ramp. I had been paddling for 27 straight hours. It was time to sleep. So much fun, I almost couldn't. I'd been warned of this, and so I took a sleeping pill, and my dad and my uncle had set up my tent, and they cooked me warm food, and I got up to pee, and I found a shower, and I got in it without a towel, and I looked amazing, and I looked like hell. It was incredible. I'd fallen in love with a river, potentially with a man, and with my ability to paddle. 7 hours and 8 minutes later, I relaunched. I had a thermos of coffee, a hot turkey sandwich wrapped in tin foil, chicken curry in a Tupperware, more chocolate, another night ahead, an empty river. Just myself and a class 3 rapid lay ahead. Stay river right, the PowerPoint had warned. Stay river right or you could die. I poised myself river right, miles above the rapids, miles before it made sense, but by God, I would not miss it. Stay river right. Five Finger Rapids loomed ahead. I could see the rocks. I had studied those photos again and again. I could hear the white water. I could see specks of people on the cliff looking down, and my GPS read 12:10 a.m. The sun had set orange over the hill. I looked up quickly as the river sucked me through. I could hear my friends shouting. Then quickly, they disappeared around the bend, and I was alone again. Rink Rapids lay ahead. Class 2, stay river right again, a boat length away from the shore. There's an old sternwheeler ground in the middle of the river. If you don't scrape on rocks, you might catch on that old steel. Stay river right by Sam McGee's ashes, and the dark enveloped me, and I slowed my pace. There must be other paddlers behind me. The others I met stopped at Fort Selkirk to stretch their legs, and I was slowing down now with a long, wide stretch ahead of me, and I wanted to make that prize money at 55 hours, and so I pressed on. It was just within reach if I kept up my pace. They pulled over and I pushed on. I did math, lots and lots of math in my head. What would my average need to be? How many more miles could I do it? Would 800 miles come close to covering my road trip? The entry fee, any of it. The beer I would drink at the end. The coffee I would drink at the end. I pushed so hard I began to sweat. I raced against the river. Logic was defying my salty self. In salt water, narrow channels mean fast water, but up here I enter them and slow to a stop. I watch canoes gain miles as I choose the wrong line. I ask for divine intervention, and I get it. The river speaks to me, and I wasn't hallucinating. She's a woman, a beautiful and strong woman, and she says to me over and over again, "That's like a beautiful woman wearing a bad pair of shoes. Don't waste your time over there." I think about disappointments in my life, and I think, "That's like wearing a bad pair of shoes. Don't waste your time over there." I interview myself like I'm an AM talk radio show host, interviewing people with an illness that they think that they should take themselves on long paddling journeys without any sleep. I interview myself for an hour with multiple voices, and I fear falling asleep. I chew gum. I eat no-dos. I drink gallons of water. I sing to myself. I talk to myself. I listen to what the river woman is telling me. I learned to read the river by looking upstream and thinking about how this woman would want to enter this valley. How does a beautiful woman want to enter a place? How do I wish to enter the world? She sways her hips around the corners. She leaves a wake of hoodoos tumbling down into her golden brown water. And after an eternity, we get to the checkpoint. And the volunteers put my boat on the rocks, and a woman with a clipboard asks me how I'm doing, and I burst into tears. "I'm a wreck," I say, "but I just need some sleep. Can I get hot water when I wake up for coffee? Where is that? And is there any water that isn't brown?" I ask. And the friends I'd left behind in Fort Selkirk pull up just minutes behind me. I had endured 7 hours alone with them just moments behind. And I walk up to the field, and I open my tent, and I put my head in it, and I don't even set it up. I just hide from the bugs with my body in my sleeping bag and my head in my tent. And 3 hours go by in a blink and they wake me up and I could be insane. And I launch behind a Voyager canoe full of women and I draft off of them and I try to eat my dinner as I'm like shoveling it in and drinking water and drafting off of the back of their boat and filling up my water bottle and chatting with the woman at the stroke oar. And I share my chocolate with them. I end up leaving them to paddle past the Japanese boat that passes them. I'm in it to win it, and I paddle for all I'm worth. I can read the river now, and I'm confident in her ways, tired but confident, and it gets dark for my third night of paddling, and I take threaded pathways away from the others, and the Japanese boat shouts, "Hey, hey, hey," on every stroke. And at first I think they're just friendly, like, "Hey, how's it going?" But they don't speak English and I don't speak Japanese, and so we smile and we paddle near each other, and then we choose different channels and I pop up behind them or in front of them, and they're really comforting to be near. And the last morning dawns with fog and sun, and my GPS dies, and I must only be 15 miles outside of Dawson City, and it's the end of the race. And I think I'm in the lead in my class, but I don't really know, and I'm confident now, and I confidently cross the channel in the fog and choose a new line. And it's a wrong line, and I slow to a crawl, and I'm cold, and I paddled so hard through the night, and I never changed clothes, and I get scared, and I have canker sores on my tongue from eating and drinking, and I don't want to eat or drink, but I need to, and I choke down another rice roll, another effing rice roll. I put on all my clothes, and I'm scared I'll do something stupid, get caught in a strainer, hit a snag, roll over. I talk myself through my every action. Launch, just keep paddling. I've been warned to stay river right at the end. Don't miss the takeout, just downstream of the Kino. It's an old sternwheeler, hug river right. I missed my 55 hour mark by 1 hour and 57 minutes. And I lost an hour or more getting lost in the fog at the end. I hear a horn that says that I finished, and a small crowd hoots and hollers. And it's 7 a.m. and my dad is crying and I'm hugging him and it's amazing. And I lift my kayak out of the water. I don't actually, I like, someone else lifts my kayak out of the water. And my friends are there and I'm as high as I've ever been. And then it ends and then we go out to breakfast and I nap and we go out for beers and I stay out to 2 a.m. although I haven't slept in days. And I met this man on the river and he wants to paddle the river and he wants to paddle the whole thing together next year. And I'm high and tired and I can no longer hold a pencil in my right hand and it's incredible. And I'm given a golden canoe necklace and a first place certificate. And we load back up in the rental car, the Chevy Captiva, and we camp our way home to the lower 48 states. And it's July 3rd, and I'm home already, and this is wrong, and I can't take it. And I load back in my car, and I cross back into Canada, and I go north to Tofino. And within days, I'm back in the remote wilds, and my carpal tunnel has not healed, but I don't care. Because a tendon is so much easier to heal than a broken for the north heart. And it's easier to camp on a remote beach, to find wolf tracks through your kitchen, to scare yourself in the swell, to laugh at your lack of being able to be in Washington State in the summer. I'm north, but not for long enough. Like a bad pair of shoes, I take a job in the San Juan Islands. And I'm driving a research boat around whales. And I'm researching the people who are watching the whales. I'm a people researcher on a boat. And I love the 150 horse outboard. And I love going fast on a choppy day. And I love crossing into Canada. And I love the whales, black and white. And I love everything that reminds me of the North. And I hate the drones that people fly over the whales to record their every moves. And the 30 plus boats that are always surrounding the whales. And the young woman who tries to swim with the transient orcas. I hate that people drive right through the orca pod. I hate that if I was up north, I wouldn't even care. Because there wouldn't be another 100 boats lined up behind that first one. And I don't blame the native fisherman. I ask him to slow down around the whales. He shouldn't have to. But down here he does. His north experience used to be here in the San Juan Islands, where now the remnants of the Bumblebee Cannery are now a park. Where now I watch as the seiners pull in a half bag of fish and that's the Highliner boat. Where I watch is the fishing game, guys are bored as they're counting single-digit fish counts. It's like a beautiful woman wearing a bad pair of shoes. So I make it through the summer. I make less money than when I was a camp counselor in high school over here in this back channel. So a couple of months go by and my friend Elsa's down visiting from Alaska and she's upgrading her hand troller to a power troller. And we walk the waterfront and we talk boats and this idea is building. A hand troller could be like my own Yukon River Quest. A chance to go alone at the fisheries, a chance to scare myself, to work without sleep, to test my own strength, to stay up north, to work myself senseless, to walk away looking like hell and amazing, with or without prize money, high and tired and in love, to be in an endurance race that lasts for 57 days instead of 57 hours.